Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Pitu. 21, instructions by Maharaj Pitu. 22, Pitu Maharaj's meeting with the four Kumaras. And 23, Maharaj Pitu's going back home. So chapter 20. Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Pitu. It's a big one. Success in life follows for one who executes the direct orders of the Lord or his representatives. So, this is a very essential point. It's of all the different aspects of devotional service, this is actually what makes it work. Right? If you don't have faith in this instruction of the spiritual master, faith in Krishna, and follow that, then things will not work. There is no other process. Right? The idea that I have good material skill, I got money, I have facilities, I'm a good manager, I organize things, that will not get you back to Godhead. It won't even point you in the direction of going back to Godhead. Right? Going back to Godhead is based on having this with faith, following and executing the direct orders of the Lord and the spiritual master. It's very essential. See, it's what we're happening here is because this is the last year of this course, right? The Masters of Theology. So, what is happening in this course, right? In the Bhagavad Gita course, the first one, in the bachelor's, we're actually learning what is devotional service, right? What actually it is, how it works, what's the function of it, how that functions, so that we can tell, because we only know there's material life and now there's spiritual life. So what actually is spiritual life and what is material life? Does that make sense? So we're telling the difference there. And then all the different aspects and different angles. Now in this section, then we're learning what is the difference between mixed devotional service and pure devotional service. Right? This is very important. If we don't know this, we will not go back to Godhead. It means if you remember Krishna at the time of death, you will go back to Godhead. That's there. But the problem is if one is too situated in mixed devotional service, one may not, because something else is more important. Right? At the moment of death, what are you going to think about? Are you going to think about Krishna? Or if, how you say, the lasagna that you got in the oven, who's going to turn it off? Or what's going to happen to your kids, or what's going to happen to your husband or wife, or what's going to happen to that, money thing that you were just arranging, or you didn't quite finish that deal on the land so that it's secure for the family. You think of any of those? You do not go. You stay here. Right? But don't worry, because you've been a devotee, you will stay here very nicely. Right? Generally the things, you go to the heavenly planets and then have a good time there. When that runs out, you come back here, back to ordinary life, right? Or you take birth in a family of devotees, where again you can worry about those things. You understand? So this is the thing, is that this is what makes it work, nothing else. So much focus on this, that. These are important as ways of service to engage yourself in the Lord's service and apply yourself to the instruction. But they are not what will get you back to Godhead. So that's the whole thing we've been seeing going through here. What is the difference? Like we learn about creation, because otherwise we think, I create my environment, right? I'm here, I work hard, I get the family, I get the house, I get the friends, I get the money, I get my social position, so I'm creating my universe. So then we learn, no, Krishna creates the universe. Having learned that, then we find out how Krishna creates the universe from the personal point of view, not just as God. You understand? And so now we're getting in here, we're getting into these other aspects, which will then culminate, we see at the end, dealing things with like ajamya, which is probably one of the most misunderstood parts. Here's a person who's not behaving nicely, but because he chants Narayan's name, he's purified. So that means, what purifies you? Nothing in this world does, because we're still here. There was something here that purified us. Means if we're here now, that means, as devotees, we have done all whatever austerities, charity, and yajnas and sacrifice that are meant to be done. Otherwise, how are we here? Right? So that's been there. But that means, that's at this end of the thing. Why are we so inspired? Because we have been at the other end. We have been through all 8,400,000 species of life. There's a good chance we've been through all the hells and everything that goes along with it. Right? But we're still here. So why is there a difference now? What's the difference? It's only because of this chant. Only because of this following the order of the spiritual master. That's the only reason. There are not other reasons. Sometimes I remember some devotee, oh yes, I was a jnani, I was looking for the supreme and this and that. But the point is there's so many jnanis. Why did we come in contact with pure devotional service? That's by Krishna's grace. Not because I was so intelligent. You understand? Like that. So, we have to understand this is very, very important, because that's what the Bhagavatam's doing. Through the stories and through the life of these people, then we are learning all the different aspects that go on. How to distinguish what is pure devotional service and what is not. Because if there's any problems in your life, that's from what's not. Good? And problems means it's a problem. Does that make sense? If a dog barks, it's a problem. What if you're a dog trainer? It's not a problem. You know? You understand? So, material world, it's only problems because we make them problems. We take something that doesn't work right and then get upset that it doesn't work right. Because it doesn't work right, but we have faith that it will work right. And when it doesn't, we get upset. Right? That's the material world. The material world doesn't work right. But we think, no, it will work perfect. No, it won't. But it will work good enough that we can remember Krishna, follow the order of the spiritual master, and go back to Godhead. That's what makes it perfect. That's the perfection of the material world. So that means whatever you're doing, if you connect it to Krishna, that's the perfection. So the ability to be able to see how to connect everything with Krishna, that's the real knowledge. Everything else gets food on your plate, clothes on your back, a roof over your head, and that's where it ends. It will not get you more. It won't. But being able to distinguish what's the difference between pure devotional service and mixed devotional service. And what is that mix? What's karma, what's jnana? You know, what's of karma, what's pious and impious? You know, so therefore what's usable in devotional service, what's not? and beyond what's usable in devotional service, what's not. You understand? Because using activities in Krishna's service is devotional service. But to be able to tell the difference between engaging my senses and in sense gratification, engaging my senses in devotional service, that's the knowledge. Getting myself freed from material entanglement, that's the value, that is a value. But having the liberation as a goal, that's a waste of time. So be able to distinguish that, just like we were discussing yesterday. Mostly we've been, you know, for the last few years when we discussed the reasons that Varnashram is not either understood or popular or practiced, is because generally the individuals aren't pious enough to do it. Because their background as such is not that. It means they're chanting because of the topmost piety, but we're born into situations we're born in by the mentality in last life. Does that make sense? So there's something there that's not quite right. In other words, if we're here, it's because of mixed devotional service. Right? So some things are good. We're chanting. Now that's the most pious people on the planet. But at the same time is what our chanting is mixed with, now that's not necessarily the most pious. So that's what we've been focusing on. Right? So that's the aspect of karma. That's the secondary aspect. But what's the primary aspect? Right? The primary aspect is philosophical, is because of this impersonal philosophy. And because of impersonalism, if I'm not going to get a material benefit, I don't do the work. Right? Karmi, jnanis, do not do any material work. Why? Because there's no benefit to get to gain. So if I don't understand the benefit of Varnashram, I don't follow it. That's because of impersonalism. So this is the things that these chapters show us. Does that make sense? Then after that it will be what is pure devotional service. Right? The Vedanta Chakshus is then showing what is pure devotional service. Right? So Prahlad Maharaj is given as the first example of where you're just dealing with pure devotional service. You're not dealing with someone on a mixed platform and bringing them to the pure platform. That's in the first six candles. The last one is pure devotion and the varieties of it, the depth of it. Does that make sense? And then the last course, that would be on within pure devotional service, what's prema? Because you have to be able to tell the difference between bhava and prema. Otherwise, you get stuck there. Right? Can't tell the difference between pure devotional service and mixed, you get stuck in mixed. Can't tell the difference between devotional service and material, you get stuck in material. You understand? So the acharyas are taking us through this step-by-step thing. So we understand devotional service is the thing. Mixed devotional service has to be removed. Pure devotional service, what's the level we have to become established in? How to practice. And then, prema. How to distinguish prema. And then within prema, what are the various aspects of prema? Because prema will take you to a lot of places in the spiritual world. Yes.
Last six candles is not prema. Yeah. We talk about.
No, it's pure devotional service. It means, of course, examples of prema is used, but what we're saying is the emphasis. It means prema is being discussed from the first, you know, first point. Like we see when Prabhupada opens the introduction to Gita. Within half a page, he's already talking about the five rasas and relationship with Krishna. But that's so that we understand, because we have to understand some Bhagavad Gita and Prayojana, where the emphasis is. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So we see is that these first two courses are primarily on Sambandha. Right? And of course, there's Sambandha all the way through. But then we see is then the next is an Abhideya, and then Prayojana. Does that make sense? So, because the first one is Sambandha, you have the knowledge you're rightly situated, so Sankarshan. But then these cantos, the first six, is then what's the proper attitude? So, Prajumna, so that we engage in pure devotional service properly. Right? Does this make sense? Then it's going to be Abhideya, how it's performed. How does Prahlad Maharaj perform his pure devotional service? How do the residents of Vrindavan, of Dwarka, Uddhava, all these different things? Right? Then you're going to get prema. So this is general. What we're saying is, why is there four courses? It's to take us through these things. Each one is perfect in itself because it has all the aspects, but where the emphasis is. Right? Just by studying Bhagavad Gita alone, you can go back to Godhead. But it's just the acharyas have given us so much just to make sure, because we happen to be a bit stubborn. Right? You don't hear from devotees yet, but the Hindus, it was a very popular thing back, you know, I always remember back 70s and 80s, you're riding on the train, right, you've got 24 hours, nothing else to do, right? So then they just sit there and argue philosophy with you for the whole train ride, right? So all the doubts that they have, then they present them as if that they're committed to these doubts, and they argue them really well, right? And then after, you know, hours of this or days of this, however long you're on the train, however long they're there, then you find out that actually they're, you know, devotees and they're committed to you know, the Shastra and all that, but these were all the doubts they had from their whole lifetime of people just bringing up and they didn't know how to answer. Then they say, yes, when I was 12, I read Bhagavad Gita. When they were 12, you're talking to a guy who's probably 40 or 50. Right? 12-year-olds don't argue with you for, you know, 24 hours on the train. Yeah, they're just sitting there with the parents. Right? You understand? So they've read it before, but the point is, no, it's perfect. Shankaracharya makes that point. If there's no other book on the planet, and there's only Gita, it will work. But we don't burn other books. We don't get that idea. That's already been tried and done like that. You know, so. Popular, but yeah, we don't follow that one. So does this make some sense? So be very careful, that's what we're trying to distinguish. So it's not that, okay, there's just some knowledge. It's a matter of how to distinguish you can apply it in your life. Because that's what we want to do. Right? That's the whole point of these courses. It's not just to go through some knowledge and get some degree. It's about how to be able to apply in your own life pure devotional service so we can distinguish it. Because Bhagavatam, that's the whole point of it. Right? The second verse is kicking out all the kinds of bogus philosophy, bogus religion, right? And some of them, this is why it's important, we wouldn't consider bogus, right? The first one, vikarma, right? That we're going to say, because that means what's, you know, sinful activities. It's not it's not pious. We'll say yes, right? But then it gives, upadharma, which means that you're following a principle of dharma, but not for the point of dharma, not because you're supposed to, because of the benefit you'll get from it. Right? I'm doing my duties in family life because of all the nice benefits I'll get from it, rather than the mode of goodness, which is I'm doing it because I'm supposed to. So that's also kicked out, because that's not you. If you use that in devotional service, it's mixed devotional service. Use the mode of goodness there, then there's chance more for pure devotional service, because I'm supposed to practice devotional service. I'm serving a Krishna. I'm the soul. I'm serving a Krishna. This is the order of Guru. I do this because I'm supposed to. Then it becomes pure goodness. Otherwise, I do it just because I'm supposed to. I'm a pious person and like that, and I'll get ultimate benefit in going to the heavenly planets or that. That's goodness, but because it has that mix of passion and ignorance in it. But it's predominantly goodness. You understand? But someone like that, it's easy to move forward, unless they're attached. Then very difficult. Good. So to be able to distinguish that, then you have Chala Dharma, where you actually take the point and you shift its meaning. I have, in other words, it's not what does the Shastra say? Bring my life along with that. This is what I want to do. Find Shastra quotes that support it. That's chala. So to someone who is religious or Krishna conscious, I will quote Krishna conscious things. But the actual meaning of them is not that. You know what I'm saying? Like, It's not pure devotional service is about the attitude in that. It's not about what you're doing, right? So therefore, because it's not about what you're doing, therefore it's fine to wear Western clothes. That's Chaladharma. Because that's not the conclusion. That we've put our own conclusion on. Because what would be the actual thing, if it's actual Dharma, is yes, it's not about that, so then therefore the secondary is only to express the primary. So then, since it's about the primary, it's about Krishna, what secondary aspect would be pleasing to Krishna? How do we know? We don't know. Shastra knows, Guru knows, the Acharyas know. So I go to Shastra. What does Shastra say? What does Shastra recommend? Right? Then going from that, then I choose what I wear. You understand? That's Dharma. But sub-Dharma connected to Krishna. But we take it and we just use it for our own purpose. That is Chaladharma. Because Chala means you take the word and give it a different meaning. You use it as a synonym. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like I say, today's a little cool. You know, and then the other guy goes, what? What's so avant-garde about today? You understand? That's Chala. Right? I'm using the words, I'm using the vocabulary, but I'm changing the meanings. You understand? So these are all the things that we have to understand that shouldn't be done. Right? And like I was mentioning there, is that, oh, you're attached, you know, that, you know, guy's saying, well, you know, we're going to, you know, the meeting's over, I'm going home for lunch. And so why don't you sit here and eat with us? We're all eating here together just like this and that. Why are you going home? You're going to spend some time with the family. Oh, they are attached. And who's saying all this? A bunch of brahmacharis? No, other grihasthas. Grihasthas that live like vanaprasas? No, they got plenty of kids. So what does it mean to them? They want us to use attached. I'm not attached, right? So I'm not going home. Why? Because I don't want to go home, because I don't want to put in the effort to go through all the different things to deal with the family. It's so much easier just to stay here. But instead of saying that, then I'll use Dharma to support it. You understand? This is Chaladharma. You understand? So extremely popular. But you have to have a brain to use Chaladharma. Or really not have a brain. So that you can't even tell that what you're saying is doesn't make sense. Right? That makes sense? And how many times, you know, have we heard, yeah, just surrender, Prabhu. And what does that mean? Is it about pure devotional service or just do what I said? So it's a managerial point. But for management, I'm saying just surrender. There is the ultimate point. If you do surrender and do the service, you'll get the pure devotional service benefit. But whether the person engaging you will, that's another thing. So that's the point. Is it doesn't matter. Even if you do, it works. That's what the Bhagavatam is pointing out. These are what these chapters, so we understand what's the difference, what's real and what's not. Right? That's what the first verse says. To be able to distinguish reality from illusion, that's the highest knowledge. That's the highest welfare. That's the highest training. Not anything else. You know, not sitting in a wet paper bag and then having a discussion about, well, this is a wet paper bag. And these are various ways you could get out of this bag. They never get out of the bag. They just talk about the bag. Does that make sense?
They still use that one there.
Can't manage your way out of that. Yeah.
I guess they couldn't.
Yes. But it's still okay. It's not dead yet. Okay, yeah. Yes.
In order to be conscious to you need to want it.
Yes.
And our desire must be more important than our desire.
Yes. Means that, yes. Means if you, that's the whole point, is that you desire, because success in life follows one who executes the orders. But why would you be executing? Why would you be getting success? Because you want it. So ultimately it comes down to desire. So the whole thing is that we have to look at the pure devotional service from these four aspects. There's the knowledge of this, there's the attitude of this, there's the application executes this, and then there's the result, the success. So all four have to be there. But depending on where it is, then each story will talk about one particular aspect. Right? But the point is it's that connection to the spiritual master. Because you desire, then Krishna puts you in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. Right? Then the process starts. Is that right?
And can you say that the spiritual master is increasing our desire?
Yes. At least you could say he's trying. Whether we respond or not is another thing. Yes.
Sorry, I remember the thing. You couldn't pour water out of a boot. The instructions were written on the soul.
That's good. Continuing, the particulars expressed in this excerpt taken from the purport to verse 13. Here is an example of receiving direct instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. One has to execute the order of Lord Vishnu, whether receiving it directly from him or from his bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Right? Because, like Gita, that's direct instruction from the Supreme Lord himself. But for us to understand it, we're hearing it from the spiritual master. So we read Gita, we read Bhagavatam. We're hearing directly from the Lord, from the devotees, and from the spiritual master. Arjuna fought the battle of Kurukshetra under the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Similarly, here Pritamars is also being given orders by Lord Vishnu regarding the execution of his duty. We have to stick to the principle stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. Every man's duty is to receive orders from Krishna or from his bona fide representative and take these orders as a life and soul without personal considerations. Because if one's focused, that's where we get where you point was there. The desire is there. Why would we be focused? Because the desire is there. No focus, no result. Yes.
Without personal considerations.
Yes. Without personal consideration. It does nothing. You just do it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound so.
So it says that the Oregonians aren't so wrong. Just do it. It means without personal consideration. See, this is where the discrimination is required. It's because now we take these words. Now that's what's going to be, the argument's going to be over the words. Right? It means the doubt's going to be over the wording. So now what's happening here, we say, without...
What was the word?
Personal consideration.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was thinking the one. Without personal consideration. So then, then someone's going to say, no, but we have to be practical. We have to be time, place, and circumstance. Yes. But the point is whose body is it? Just that would be whose body is it? Is it his or is it mine? You know, who's easy, is he? You know, who's easy, is he yours, or is he mine? I guess that's what happens when the Ashkenazis go across the Atlantic. There's a Atlantic. They didn't have like that. Okay. So, whose body is it? Ours. Okay, then that answers the question. So then, without personal consideration, because you consider it's yours, so it's not about your it being your body. It has to be that it's Krishna's body. Yeah. Okay. You understand? So, it's Krishna's body. Therefore, how would Krishna want this body that belongs to him to be used? Yes. So that's the point, what it means here. It doesn't mean that it's not practically applied, because we can only apply devotional service through the practical situations we're in. We have to engage the senses. That's all we have. Right? It's not. There's this idea that, okay, devotional, I'm engaging my senses, so devotional service must be not engaging the senses. But where would that come from? That comes from impersonalism. Right? Or if I engage my senses, then, you know, I get material benefit. That comes from karma. So these are the mixes that we have to be able to distinguish. So the point is, it's about personal consideration. It means it's not for my benefit. It's for Krishna's benefit. But if we benefit Krishna, we automatically get benefit. Now we would say, well, how will that work? If we just do something for Krishna, why would I get the benefit? But the point is how are you serving Krishna? How will we serve? With devotion, yes. But I'm saying, what facilities will we use? Whatever we have, not whatever someone else has. You understand? So we're going to use what we have. So if we engage what we have, according to its nature in Krishna's service, it will generate a result. So will we not get benefit from that result? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Devotional service already includes your material result. You make material endeavor, you may or may not get success. But you make spiritual endeavor, you get the spiritual and the material. It's already, you know what I'm saying? If you scratch your own head, the head in the mirror is getting scratched also. So it's... This is what we mean, is that this, because once we're over this, we don't ask about the personal considerations, we understand how to engage, then we can just get down to talking about pure devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishnu Thakur states that one should not care very much whether he is going to be liberated or not, but he should simply execute the direct order under the direct order received from the spiritual master. It's not about, because it's not about the benefit. It's not about the personal consideration as karma. It's not about the liberation as jnana. If one sticks to the principle of abiding by the order of the spiritual master, he will always remain in a liberated position. Because that's liberated. If you're not acting under the modes, you're liberated. If you act under the modes, you're not liberated. Right? It doesn't mean we're not engaging the modes, but we're not acting under the modes. A common man must execute the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma. Right? So, a common man. Right? So, who are these instructions for? Huh? The common man. Yes, yeah, so who's the common man? That's us. Right? By working in his prescribed duty according to the caste system, Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the spiritual order system, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that one's spiritual, one's social. Right? But unfortunately, we put the emphasis on the social and then try to bring out its spiritual aspect, though we're not running it in consideration of the spiritual. If one simply executes regularly and strictly the injunctions given for the different divisions of life, then one satisfies Lord Vishnu. So, since when does the karmi care about Lord Vishnu? He wants the results of Lord Vishnu, but does he want to satisfy Lord Vishnu? Other than he'll get results. So this, therefore, we can understand that the common man here means the general devotees. Right? Otherwise, like yesterday in the class, this Hari Bhakti Vilas, that's for the karmis and materialists. It's an encyclopedia. Who sits down and writes an encyclopedia for karmis? Who even writes a pamphlet for karmis? Let alone an encyclopedia. So therefore, it's for the devotees. But like we said before, if it doesn't fit us, we throw it out. That's the impersonal. And what's our motive behind that? The karma. I'll get the benefit. If we follow the instructions of the spiritual master and execute devotional service to the Lord, we will remain always free from the contamination of bodily and material activities, and our life will be successful. So it's not saying we won't be doing activities. We'll be free from material activities, which means an activity being done not to please Krishna is material. The same activity done to be done to please Krishna is spiritual. So depending on the attitude, then whatever we're doing can be devotional service, can be karma, can be jnana. Right? And how do we know? From the order of the spiritual master. That's where we're going to be able to distinguish. Adhyaya Prakashita. In the 20th chapter, after being instructed by the Lord, Prithu makes friends with Indra and praises the Lord. Okay, so here's a person who's been giving him trouble. But because the attitude's changed, then one's friends. What makes someone friend and enemy is attitude. Change the attitude, then what's the problem? Oh, naturally, it means if Indra was still trying to get him, then, you know, it would be a different thing. But point is one stops, and then if you change the attitude, then everything adjusts itself. The Lord gives him benedictions and then departs. Lord Sri Vishnu was very satisfied by all that had been transpired. He personally appeared in the sacrificial arena accompanied by Indradev and requested King Prithu to forgive Indra for disturbing the sacrifice. A liberated soul, Sri Vishnu pointed out, never harbors malice towards another, since he is always conscious of the difference between the soul and the body. Right? So this idea that somebody is eternally damned is not coming from the position of a liberated soul. That comes from the position of a materialistic soul. Does that make sense? So we always have to remember that in devotional service. Because here, why this example? Right? Because it's a very extreme. Because otherwise we will say, oh, what's happening to me is worse. But do we have worse than Indra's after us? Yeah. Right? And all the trouble that he creates and all that? No. So therefore we have to agree that, okay, my situation is not as bad as this, so if Prithu can forgive Indra, therefore why can't I forgive whoever it is? You know who you are. Right? Is that the thing? Yeah. Prithu, as a king, yeah, and how does he do it? Because he tells the difference between the soul and the body. The body has a conditioning, it acts in a certain way. The soul is beyond that. So if someone's acting on the platform of the soul, it's accepted that way. They act not, you adjust accordingly, but when it changes again, then it goes back to normal. But it doesn't mean that one's not aware, just like Yudhishthira Maharaj, then it's not that he's being a liberated soul and being forgiving is not aware of Duryodhana's nature and is therefore not careful. It's practical, but at the same time it's base coming from the situation of the soul. That's where it starts. Prithu, as a king with such profound spiritual vision, must not allow himself to be carried away by the material energy and in this way indulge in the polluted mentality that Indra's his enemy. Right? And here's another point. It's okay, now we've given the example of Indra, but the person who's forgiving is Prithu, who's a king. Kshatriyas really don't like to forgive. Very difficult for them because of the mode of passion. But here he is. So that means it's not that, Indra's there, but, you know, I can't because of my nature. No, any nature can forgive, you know, whatever's happened. Does that make sense? But it means from the spiritual point of view. Right? Huh? And from the material, you adjust according to what's the mentality. In other words, we see according to the spiritual vision whether the other person can reciprocate that or not is another thing. And it's also a matter of what's your position, whether you need to worry about that or not. Like Prithu Maharaj as a king, then would worry about it because it's creating trouble for his citizens. But the Avantipur Brahmin, he doesn't worry about it. Because the only effect it'll have is on himself. So. The Lord praised King Prithu for his elevated qualities and behavior and declared himself captivated by them. Right? So that's the thing, is that qualities is the basis of commonality. Right? We're limited, Krishna is unlimited. What's common ground? Right? There's 50 qualities. So those qualities are the basis of the relationship. Right? Shantaras means you appreciate the good qualities. Right? Is that what it is? Right? Servitorship means appreciating more, you want to render service. You understand? So it's based on qualities. So that's the whole thing, is the qualities are things that are manifestations, are engaged in manifesting those qualities. Is that what it is? So it all comes back to the qualities. So that's why that attracts Krishna. That's why it's said the devotee has good qualities, it attracts Krishna. Nowadays, no, you have rights, you can be a rage, or this and that. How is that going to ever attract Krishna? It never will. It's popular, but that's the point. It's just popular. And then the modes of nature change, and then it's not popular. Don't worry, whatever is going on today that everybody says this is the way it has to be done, give it an X amount of years and it will be the exact opposite.
Still won't work.
Hmm?
Still won't work.
Yeah, and it still won't work. Yes, yes, of course. You understand? So say, no, this is the way it is, it's like this is eternal. No, it's just the modes of nature making like this, and it goes back and forth, back and forth. You know, up to the 20s, people were pretty conservative. In the 20s, they went nuts. They weren't conservative. Like that. Then after they became conservative again, then they went nuts again. Right? It just keeps going back and forth. It's just how it works. Because the materialist is trying to be happy, tries one thing, it doesn't work, so then he goes to the opposite side. Does that make sense? Right? Morning, he eats his cereal. He's not happy, he eats toast. He's not happy, he goes back to eating cereal. Then he tries eating toast and cereal. Then he really has a problem. Now what is he doing? Right? So now it's fast. Right? Okay? Yes,
vegan.
Hmm? Vegan, yeah. Or raw food. He goes and binges, or he just eats donuts. Not a bad option. Yeah.
Now that's a question, please. Many people with character.
Yes. Means the character is based on qualities. You call someone by character by their qualities that they manifest. So if someone has good qualities, you say they have good character. They have bad qualities, they have bad character. Right? And then everything's always a mix. It's just in what situation, what's standing out. You know, just like, let's say, it's less of a typical thing now, but before it was not an atypical thing, is that you have, let's say, a gangster, but he won't hurt women and children. But any man gets in his way, he'll kill him without blinking an eye. But he won't hurt women and children. So he's very kind on that side. In fact, he probably, you know, gives some charity, takes care of a few people, does some things like this. You know, on that side. So from that angle, he's a very nice person. But from the other side, he's not. Or we give the example that he had always that kind of funny between the American gangster and the British gangster. You know, the American gangster yells, screams, and jumps up and down and this and that. And the British one talks very nicely and very calmly and peacefully in very educated language. They both kill you. Right, like that. But it's in other words, there's these different qualities that are there. So there's always a mix. That's the thing. So what we're looking for is what mix is useful in devotional service. What is the recommended mix? So here we're getting one. One, you have to have faith in this order of the spiritual master. So faith is important. right? And then where to apply it? The topmost is in the instruction of the spiritual master. Then forgiveness is there. But forgiveness, the top is forgiveness based on the knowledge of the soul. It's not forgiveness based on attachment. It's forgiveness based on the quality of the soul. Right? So this is the natural personal position. Because we'll say, oh, but then it will be impersonal. Where's the loving relationships? But the point is, why are there loving relationships here in the material world? Because of what benefit we get. But in the spiritual, then, it's because it pleases Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So that's actually love. So the real love is there. We're just not used to what real love is. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, you have those funny little spray cans that you push the button on the top and the spray goes straight up that you keep in toilets. Right? So if we think that this is good fragrance, then, you know, some nice French perfume we may not relate to. You know, it's too subtle. There's no smell. Where's the, you know, where again? Come on, you know. So that's the whole point, is that we're so used to the material concept of love that the concept of spiritual love doesn't make sense. So we think that there's nothing there. So we say that's impersonal, when the real reason that we're doing what we're doing is impersonal. Because we're leaving Krishna out. Right? This is an interesting example. I'm sure it'll come up later. But just that when we were studying in Kapila Muni's instructions, then we understand is that you have all the atoms of the pradhan when they become separated in mahat, but they're just individual atoms. They don't come together. They just are sitting there. So the demigods can do nothing with them. So then Krishna enters as attraction. Right? So what we call gravity is Krishna as the form of attraction. Right? Does that make sense? It does. So that Prajumna element, or that Shankarshan element, right? But Shankarshan will be what holds it together. Prajumna is our attraction to it. You know, the emotional. Right? That physically things are held together, that's Shankarshan, but the emotional, that's Prajumna. Right? So, then that means everything's held together because the Krishna is attracted to Krishna. And it's all his energy, it's coming from him. Right? So, therefore, all energy in the cosmos, whether it's material or spiritual, is Krishna's and connected to him and is attracted to him. We're trying to deal with this energy not being attracted to him. You understand? So it's like trying to swim upstream. Right? Technically, we're swimming downstream because everything's going up to Krishna. But we're trying to swim away from Krishna. That's why it's so difficult. We're saying, why is the material world so hard? Because we're swimming against the current. The current's going towards Krishna. You just use everything in Krishna's service. It's very easy. It goes very quickly towards Krishna and everything. But because we're trying to go away, so everything's connected to Krishna. We're trying to take, oh, certain things are and certain things are not. No, but everything's connected to Krishna. But we have to see it in connection to Krishna. Not that, oh, everything's connected to Krishna, therefore I can enjoy higher life, because then Krishna's out again. It has to be Krishna's there through the whole equation. Does that make sense? Yes.
All right, the example you're giving when Krishna enters the Godan, does that happen through the morning Sada Shiva when he glances at one of the things, that information?
Yes. No, we're talking about that point. But see, as you have the original, the primordial demigods, as you're talking about that in the Purusha Shukta. So the primary creation, you have part of it inside and part of it outside the universe. It's the outside that's for all universes, but then that gets in each universe. Right? And then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu deals with that. So Karanodakshaya Vishnu is dealing with the glands, separating the elements, everything being there, the original aspects. Then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is within the universe. Then he extends his potency into all of these aspects so that they function. Right? Because in the Karanodakshaya, these are just what is the existence of things. Right? Because he's Sankarshan. But prajumna means our attraction to it, so that means he has to enter to create that attraction. So Sankarshani has created the attraction of the there, and there's the concept of a horse. But then there has to be, they said, Harini Garbha, Garbhadaksha Vishnu has entered it for the purpose of we, you know, attracted to the horse. Whatever reason we're attracted. In fact, the horse is attracted to the horse. Prabhupada mentions that horses, you see them standing, they're always checking themselves out. Other animals don't do that. The horses know they look good and they're always, you know, looking and checking and like that. Does that make sense? So that's then what we're attracted to. Right? Yes? Yeah, this is all Mahat. But what we're meaning is that it's all there. So in the same way, the spiritual world is the same thing. It's all Krishna's energy and all of them are naturally connected to Him. So if you see things in connection with Krishna, you're part of the spiritual thing. If you don't see a connection with Krishna, then you're actually technically part of the material. Like, just like, can you tell the difference? Someone is swimming upstream, I mean swimming downstream, and someone swimming upstream. Right? Because one, you just go with it. There's no ripples, there's nothing. But the other one, there's plenty of ripples. So you can tell. Just someone doesn't have the right consciousness. So it's not rocket science. You understand? Therefore, even though you may be in the spiritual world, you're not there. Because you're where your mentality is. Right? Home is where the heart is. Right? So one's heart is in material enjoyment, so welcome to the material world. Right? Is that it? He pointed out that one without such qualities and behavior cannot achieve his favor, even if he performs sacrifices, austerities, or mystic yoga. And these are topmost, let alone something else. You took out the garbage or something. You know, you put the toilet seat back down. You know, I mean, all kinds of important things. So we're talking about these are topmost. Right? The Lord declared that Peter Myers may therefore ask him any benediction he likes. In the presence of the Supreme Lord and His empowered incarnation, Prithu, Indra became ashamed and fell at Prithu's feet. Right? Because then now he understands things from the proper point of view. In other words, if Prithu Mars is giving up looking at him as his enemy, then Indra basically has to give up that mentality also. And so now he becomes ashamed because now he's standing in front of two aspects of the personality of God, right? As Vishnu and as Prithu. Right, and he's kind of made a mess of the whole thing. Right, for his own position, he's created a dharma that's going to be displeasing to Vishnu. At the same time, he's going against the sacrifice of the Lord as Prithu. Right, so then you know you figure out, you know, not smart, not economic. Prithu embraced him in great ecstasy and gave up all ill will he might have had in his heart for Indra stealing the sacrificial horse. Right? Because it wouldn't be Indra, it would be about what he's done wrong. But the point is what has done wrong? Not the soul, the conditioning of Indra. So dead matter has done wrong with dead matter. So if you're working on the spiritual platform, what's the problem? You know, just like Prabhupada gives the example. If one animal in the forest kills another animal, is everybody jumping up and down and, you know, saying, oh, what injustice, what violence, what... No. Prithu then worshipped the Lord with great devotion. Though the Lord intended to depart, he was delayed by the sweet fervor of King Prithu's pure devotion to his person. Okay, so even the Lord worships the Lord. He's so attractive. Right? That even the Lord worships himself. Like, you know, does that make sense? So here, Prithu Mars is worshiping, or Krishna on the banyan leaf is a baby sucking his own toe, licking his own toe because the sages are so attractive, or Krishna comes to Srimati, you know, Radharani is Lord Chaitanya because he's so attractive. Okay. Right? And it also says to his person, not to his Godheadness, not to his Brahmanness, but to his person. Right? So it means that personal aspect. The king's eyes were filled with tears and his voice was so choked he could not speak. He simply embraced the Lord in the core of his heart. At last he was able to offer heartfelt prayers, right? Because, you know, in the beginning you can, but at some point you can't. Right? So the emotion is expressed, and then after that, then they can talk. Pritamar said that in this world, in which so many conditioned souls were bewildered by desires born of forgetfulness, the only real benediction to ask from the Lord is any position of devotional service that gives him pleasure. That gives him pleasure, meaning the Lord. Right, so that's the only benediction. Other things we do just as a matter of course. Does that make sense? So benediction is to get devotional service, that we can always be engaged in Lord's service. Matter of course is we do our particular duties, take care of ourselves, maintain ourselves. That's just a matter of course. Just like when you eat, you put all your focus on chewing or swallowing, right? If you don't swallow, you don't get the benefit. So shouldn't we be focusing on swallowing? You know, at the dinner table, everyone sort of swallows. Wow, what a good swallow. Are they going to get some benefit there? Yeah. You know, so it'll be a... Instead of, you know, oh, what did he eat yesterday? What did you swallow yesterday? Yeah, I swallowed 23 times. Ooh, yeah. You understand? It gets a little... So that's the whole point, is that this is just matter of course. Of course one takes care of the family and all the different things that are there. That's why Rupa Goswami says one takes care of ordinary dealings. These are ordinary dealings. Right? Generally, as a discussion, it's never discussed. What is ordinary dealings? It's one of the 64 items of Vaidhi Bhakti. You ever heard a class on it? Ordinary dealings, how to deal? You don't hear it. I kind of remember somebody talking about it in the 90s once. You understand? So ordinary means these are ordinary things, just everybody does them. So that's taken care of. That's why there's a structure, so that you can take care of nicely. In other words, something ordinary, it should be very straightforward how it's done. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it shouldn't be when you swallow, you have to worry about, okay, which pipe it goes down, or, you know, what apparatuses you are using, or, you understand? It's just straightforward. So you have the Varnashram, it's very simple. I fit in here, I do these duties. Now this has changed, so now I fit in here, I do those duties. Does that make sense? So it's just, that's the natural flow of things. Yeah. So that's the real benediction. That's what we pray for. Other things, and just that we may be able to engage yourself in the Lord's service. Because what do we care if what we're doing has obstacles or not? If we're absorbed in Krishna, it doesn't matter. You understand? That's the point. Yes?
How about you give the example of the ordinary beings? The reason we don't discuss is because the attachment is there?
Can be, because we're worried that if you bring it up, then we're going to have to give up something. Right? Yeah, especially if it's, you know, the sannyasis or brahmacharis are giving the class, then you really don't want to ask them about it. Yeah. No, because it's just a matter of, because we're thinking that I'll only do it if I'm attached. If I'm not attached, I don't do it. So it's one of the major problems in our social structure, whatever, it affects everything. It affects the families, affects the education, affects everything. Right? I only do something because I'm attached. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, the man's attached, so therefore he's at home, he's doing all the things, he's not so attached, he's not at home, he's just doing whatever he likes. Right? Does that make sense? So, but the point is it's supposed to be as no. He's a grihastha, therefore he does those duties, whether he's attached or not. If you're attached, you engage him in the Lord's service, you get purified. You're not attached, then easier to engage in the Lord's service. Right? You know. So that's the idea. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why the focus is on that. Coming to goodness means you do, because you're supposed, because it's ordinary dealings. But we make it such, because for the karmis, ordinary dealings is all they got. You know? And for those who don't follow the Vedas, then ordinary act is really all they got. You know? They don't even have anything necessarily very pious. You know, there's some idea of some piety, you know, but it's not the... It's quickly forgotten. The ideology is quickly forgotten. Like, you know, you may have the meeting and everybody gets there, and then you talk about some ideals, but then immediately get into practical and the ideals are gone. But so the ordinary is all that they have. So for the devotee, is ordinary is there, it's important, you take care of it. You know, just like just telling some of us, just saying they were using a devotee's car, right? So one, the battery's low, so it doesn't start. So they do something with it, you know, and then charge the battery or something. And then they think, okay, cool. They go out, drive. They take it for a drive so that the, you know, the battery will be, you know, charged nicely and all that. They get to some, and they're out driving. They get to some place, you know, they're, you know, it's been a bit of a drive, so they stop, go to the bathroom, get themselves a drink, come out, car won't start. You know, why not? They're just thinking, I just charged the battery, drove the car, it should work, you know. Then that's not worked, you know, so then what's wrong? Battery's dead. Okay, so they go out, buy a new battery, right? Put in the new battery, still doesn't work. Right? Why not? Because the thing that charges the battery is dead. The alternator. Okay? That's dead. Right? So and then why is this? Because they never maintain it. Why? Because we don't worry about these things. At the same time as the person does have a $300,000 house. So in other words, just what they value, they take care of, and everything else is, oh, you know, it's, we're devotees. You understand? So that's the difference. You know, someone else has, you know, nice cars, well maintained, and they live in a studio. You understand? So it's just where the values are. But the point is, this ordinary, it's not taken care of because, oh, we're devotees, it doesn't matter, it's all Maya. It's Maya if it's not connected to Krishna. So therefore, this car is Maya. They say the car is a Maya. Yes, it is Maya. Why? Because they're not connecting it to Krishna. It's not Krishna's car. If it's Krishna's car, why are Krishna's cars the worst cars on the planet? And even a Calcutta taxi is probably in better shape than one of Krishna's cars. You know? The Lord mercifully responded to Pritamarsa's prayers, blessing him with such devotional service that will transport him across the insurmountable Maya. And so that means pure devotional service. Because mixed devotional service, it will be useful, but the point is pure devotional service is what's actually the real benefit. The Lord assured the king that if he carefully and faithfully carried out his instructions, he would always find good fortune all over the world, right? So faithful, you can have faith but not be careful. Or you can be careful and not have faith, so that you have both of them, that's what you want. Right? So carefully means you're attentive to detail. After being worshipped by the king, the Lord blessed him and departed. The king then respectfully worshipped the other attendees of the sacrifice before they departed for their own abodes. Though the Lord himself had already returned to the spiritual sky, he still revealed himself to King Prithu again in response to his offering respectful obeisances to him a final time at the conclusion of his devotion. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 16. Lord Vishnu instructs Prithu Maharaj. 17 to 31. Prithu Maharaj gives up all envy against Indra and offers prayers to the Lord, 32 to 38. Lord Vishnu gives benedictions to Prithu Maharaj and departs. Verses 1 to 16, Lord Vishnu instructs Prithu Maharaj. In verses 1 to 16, Sri Vishnu instructed Prithu Maharaj that a liberated soul should not be envious towards others, since he is always conscious of the difference between the soul and the body. Because the body is the one that will be doing the things, not the soul. The soul wants to take part, but it's happening under the modes. Since Prithu is an advanced devotee, he must not allow himself to be carried away by the material energy, and in this way indulge in the polluted mentality that Indra is his enemy. Yes.
What one should do about this mentality if it comes from
there? Be conscious of it and understand how it's not ideal. That's there. Because it means, in other words, you start by understanding that something is not proper. Right? We can correct something if we first understand it's not good.
If it's genuine, not proper, what was done? Like that.
We're not saying that it's not. We're not saying that it's not done. We're talking about forgiveness. We're not saying that there's not some correction or that if it's in our position to do that. Right? Because Indra, then that will be with Lord Vishnu. That will be taken care of there. And but for the king, then that's not his business. Right? It means that if Indra's messing with his service in his control, then he can get involved. But outside of that, then no. It means that Indra's doing his Indra stuff up in the heavenly planets. He doesn't get involved. But if Indra shows up at his doorstep and is making trouble, then he can take care of it. Right? So. There's the aspect of taking care, but there's the aspect of what is our mentality in dealing with it? Because that's the real point. Someone's doing something right or wrong that has nothing to do with your going back to Godhead. Your going back to Godhead is not being involved on the material platform. Does that make sense? Because what we're talking here is he's forgiving Indra, but Indra has done something wrong. Right? But the point is then it's a matter of correcting that. Because the real point is to not do that. It's not about the reaction to the game. Right? Just like, let's say, I do something. I cook lunch for and offer it to Krishna. Is it about the lunch or is it about pleasing Krishna? Yes. Because the lunch is there, but the focus is on pleasing Krishna. Right? So now Indra's done something wrong. So that means it's an endeavor, he gets a result. So is it about the result of him getting the punishment for what he's done wrong? Or is it about the pleasure of Krishna? Yeah. So therefore, pleasure of Krishna, then when Indra adjusts his mentality that he gives up that kind of way of thinking, then it's corrected. Right? Because we're thinking a reaction comes, and that's what's going to correct it. Does that make sense? But that's not actually what's going to work. But it's all right pointing it the way it was. No, I'm just saying, because we have fans on the other side, because that one then can blow down that way, because there's no fans.
The problem is it starts moving right, so it's not this
shit. I see. These things are noisy. You can actually hear. I'm thinking, why is she talking so quietly? Actually, you're talking normal, right?
So our main point is not to worry about the correction or reaction for another people.
No.
Of course.
It's about how we can look at it. It doesn't mean that we're naive, but it does. But it means it's just like this. Within individuals within your environment, that you can worry about. Does that make sense? But outside of that, it's not our control, so therefore there's nothing to do. So things aren't ideal, but that's the way it is. So, does that make sense? Yeah, so we don't worry about it. Right? We're used to worrying about it because we think that by the correction process that my environment will improve, so my enjoyment will be greater. Right? That's the reason that we want punishment. Because these things disturb my environment. One, they should get, it made me unhappy, so they should be made unhappy also. Right? But we should also make them unhappy so that they don't make us unhappy again. Yes, eternally. Yes. Yes, yeah, so it's pointing out that this mentality is not very useful, because then we're placing too much value within the material, and it doesn't warrant that attention. Does that make sense? It doesn't warrant that attention, because it can't give the results that we're looking for. Right? We want all our facility, because that facility is going to make us happy. But the point is it doesn't actually ultimately make us happy. Does that make sense? So that's why one can't put as much focus on it. It's not that one deals with it. That's why Varnashram deals with these things. Because Varna will deal with, you know, the occupation to generate, you know, the facility. Right? The ashram, then that will take care of the use of that facility. Right, in according to your position, but then devotional service is actually more important. It's more main. Right? So, in other words, we're devotees. We're supposed to be doing devotional service. We situate ourselves what works for us according to our ashram. Then we perform the activities that maintain that ashram. Right. So, for a brahmachari, vanaprastha sannyas, it's brahminical. But for the grihastha, it may be brahminical, maybe kshatriya vaishya shudra. Does that make sense? So we have to know the hierarchy. Right? So devotional service, that's the main. Then we have our ashram situation, and then we have the varna. Then it has some meaning. Right? Does that make sense? So just as in the same way is money is to generate facilities so that you can use them in personal relationships. The same way as the whole Varnashram is creating the facility to engage in personal relationships connected with the Lord. It always goes back to the personal. Even in the modern, they talk about personal, though they don't know what personal is, but it sounds good. Because it's the souls that are listening, so it sounds good to them, though they don't really know what it is. Yes.
So Maharaj, in the explanation about Varnashram you gave, we see that sometimes when you talk about that to some groups, they tend to put the Varna on top of everything, but that would be the what's missing. And I think they missed the point you just mentioned.
No, it's not missing. I mean, they'll say it's missing, but what they're missing is that, no, it's not missing. The point is people who have jobs, they all have jobs. It's not that the guys with jobs are suddenly going to turn into crack, you know, businessmen and professionals. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. If the devotee's sitting there saying, well, if this had happened or that had happened, then I'd have this or I'd have that, right? Now, let's say we just, you know how they do, they have the shot and then you shift it over and there's another situation, you have the same people. Now we're at a pub and all the guys there leaning in the counter with their beers and that and talking. Yeah, if this had happened, then, you know, this would have been that. What's the difference?
Ordinary dealings.
Huh? It's ordinary dealings, yeah. But the devotees are thinking, no, it's there, but everyone was maintained before. How was it that all those devotees in the 70s, early 80s, how were they all taken care of? No one had a job. Everyone was eating, and probably a good chance they're eating better then than they are now. I can almost guarantee it. Individuals, no, but in general, yes. So how is that working? They were just doing brahminical activities. So now that you add kshatriya, vaishya, and shudra, then now that was what's missing? Prabhupada was already talking about it in the mid-70s. Did anybody catch it? No, but only when they think it, now it's something important. Otherwise, it was just philosophy when Prabhupada was talking about it. Right? Because we have to look at it. I think there's a handful of individuals who are working on the administrative level as devotees. I just heard of one the other day, it's like a senator in one of the states in America. Like that. you know, and one or two here and there. We had one boy that used to work as a PA for also a senator, I think, or a congressperson. Like that. A handful. Okay. Then there's a few more that are have businesses and do stuff like that. And then there's everybody else. So the difference is the whole big thing that we haven't added to Krishna consciousness was going out and getting a job. You know what I'm saying? So it's a misnomer. All it is something that so they can just put on the side what's the reality. Because varnas generates the money, so then the idea is money is everything. But money is not everything. So if someone says that, you're not dealing with Brahmins or Kshatriyas. You understand? Or they may be Brahmins or Kshatriyas, but they've been in bad associations, so they don't quite catch the having the right angle. And in any case, it's not a Brahmin or Kshatriya in the town. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difference. So you have to see is all these things are there, but you have to catch what it is. You know? So, and even it's been added. Since 81, it's been okay to be a grihastha. It's not Maya. 81. That's 34 years. And so, if someone hasn't gotten it together in 34 years, there's something wrong. Like, interesting, I used to always say, you know, in 6 months, if you don't turn something around, then it's not that. When I was in the West this time, I was talking to some professionals. They say, nowadays, it's 90 days. They give you 90 days. If you haven't turned the thing around in 90 days, then you're out and you bring in someone else. 90 days. And we're here 31 years. So the point is it's not going to change. All it is Daiva Varnashram is a mentality. People are already family people. People already have jobs. So then what makes a Daiva Varnashram? What makes a Daiva Varnashram is the mentality that connects it to Krishna. Not that they're married and they have a job. That's not what makes it. That's going on anyway. Prabhupada says that even the karmis are functioning according to Varnashram, but it's not scientific. So all we're talking about is scientific. How do you make it scientific? By the mentality. And then how do you do that? It means you know what you do, you just do that. Right? So when people talk about obligations, that's Varnashram. When they talk about rights, that's atheism. So that's the difficulty. If everyone's talking about what everybody's obligation is, then everybody knows what to do and it works. But if everyone just talks about their rights, then rights means I get it, I don't work. So how is that progressive? You can't get anything if you don't work. You know, the whole point is that, you know, people want a welfare state, but where does the money for the welfare state come from? From the people who are working. So if nobody works, where's the money going to come from? Right? Unless you have a guy named Pizarro and you send him to South America. Then you cannot work for a few centuries, you know? But now I think they have to work. Right? I think lazy time's over. Since Prithu is an advanced devotee, he must not allow himself to be carried away by the material energy, and in this way indulge in the polluted mentality that injures his energy. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, being very much satisfied by the performance of 99 horse sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, appeared on the scene." Right? Why mention 99? A good number?
What's the story?
Huh?
100 is the goal, so it's
99. No, but the point is he wanted to do 100, but out of consideration and respect for Indra, he did 99. That's what pleases the Lord. Right? So the point is Indra does 100, and he gets the position of Indra, but not necessarily the personal blessings of the Lord. Prithu does 99, and he gets the personal blessings of the Lord. Because of mentality. That's the whole point. So whatever you do with the mentality is right, that's what pleases Krishna.
And most of them have Shakti Vaishnava.
Prithu is, you could say, we would more clearly say he's a Shakti Vaishnavatar, because then he is representing the Lord by manifesting that particular potency, like his is administration on a full platform. While Indra, along with the other 33 million demigods, they represent the different potencies of the Lord required to manage a universe. Right? So in that way, then everybody's representing, the soul is also representing this and that, but you wouldn't call Indra as such a Shakti Vaishnavatar. You know, necessarily. He is a potency of the Lord, so in the universal form of all the demigods, he'll be the prominent. Right? But of the demigods who's actually prominent, then there'll be Narad Muni. Right? Because he's the sage. Of the demigods of Brahma, he'll be prominent because he's the creator. Shiva will be prominent because he's the destroyer. You know, so depending on which aspect you're looking at, then you'll bring someone to prominence. But so that's why one sees all these, but then when there's a hierarchy, that's the importance of hierarchy. This common modern thing of making everything equal is very detrimental. It's actually based again on impersonalism. Everything's the same, everything's equal. So when you say we're all equal, that's impersonalism. Since when is everybody equal? Right? The souls are equal, but you can't say the conditionings are equal. You have to be foolish. You have to be totally impractical if everybody's in. Like I was just hearing, one devotee was saying, he works in South Africa. So because of the previous administration there, then there was a lot of discrimination, right, against different ethnic groups. Right? Now that the new government's there, then they are, you know, removing this, how you say, discrimination. But they take it a step further. You have to hire people from these particular ethnic groups, whether the guy's qualified or not. They get the first option. In other words, if there's a guy from one of these ethnic groups there, he gets it first, even though there's a more qualified person from something else. So he was saying it's a really funny thing is that you have all these people in the company, they don't have any idea of what they're doing. So a guy has been hired as to do a desk job at the computer. He doesn't even know computer. It says all he knows how to do is turn on the computer to look at his email. Literally. So he has to actually show him how to do all his job. And so then what happens? It means how do the companies make profit? And if they don't make profit, then, you know, then the government doesn't get their tax. They can't function. So how does anything run? So you have to be able to discriminate. But you're not discriminating, meaning that you have... you have to discriminate on the item of application. In other words, does the person know the job? So whoever knows the job, it doesn't matter who they are or their ethnicity or anything. They get the job. Not that this ethnicity or that one does or doesn't get. That's real equality. Because it means the job is open to anybody who qualifies. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Who qualifies, they get. Because you see, if you apply that, it works. It means one can say, but it won't work, you have to... No. Just like, let's take one of these professional soccer teams. What are the background of all the people that are on this team? They're from all variety of backgrounds. Some kids right off the street. I think it was, what is it, Maradona or something? He was a street kid. Right? Because they don't have anything to do. They're not going to school, so they all day play with the ball. So he was so expert. What he could do with the ball in his feet, you know, people can't even imagine. You know? And he's there with people from, you know, educated, you know, college backgrounds and everything like that. They're all on the same team. They're all equals because they all have the skills. So here's an example where the equality works. You have the skill, you're there. Doesn't matter what your background. So that's the whole thing, is that has to be understood, is that these qualities are Krishna's qualities. So we can't play with them. We can't say, I give the definition of what equality is. No, Krishna already is. Krishna is equality. So we have to work on that. That's how it works. So this is the problem, is that all these things are you know, improperly applied dharma. They're all generally adharma. They're just not religious. They're not according to the religious principles. We just make it up because the modern man says this is good, then we talk about it. It's like when I was a kid, no one talked about health food. Hippies did, but the mainstream did not. You were weird. You know, you ate your burgers and fries, and you know, and you did all, you just did like that. You know, how you say, if it was man-made, it's better than natural. It's just the way it was. And so you're just weird. Do you understand? But then the mainstream, then now they talk about it. You know, healthy food and this and that. Then now we value it. You understand? So then this kind of thing is a waste of time. Like that. Nowadays on the thing, you know, you get it, it's organic, it's free range. Now we care. Before, no one cared. But is the care taken to the point where you see devotees on the farm? Never.
Next day.
Yeah.
Coming soon.
Just now coming. Give us a few hundred years, and I'll definitely be. You understand? So then it's just by what's. It's not about what, by Shastra. It's not about Krishna. It's not about, it's Krishna's quality defined according to how that Krishna gives. Because all the qualities are defined. We define it very clearly. Someone's qualified, they get it. It's not by sentiment, it's not by this, that. They have the qualification, they have that. But at the same time, it's then this qualification for devotional service. Right? So now here, if you have a manager who's good at managing and is forgiving, bingo. Yes.
What to do when we try to do something to please Krishna? We give charity to please Krishna, but at the same time, different devotees are in anxiety and suffering for the thing that I want to do to please Krishna.
Means you're trying to please Krishna and they're in anxiety that you're trying to please Krishna.
Probably.
Oh, about the method you're trying to please Krishna.
Yeah.
But so the whole point is why would they be in anxiety? Why you?
Maybe they don't,
you know what I'm saying? Why you? Why you? Why are they anxiety about you? Just they have a bowl full of all the names of the devotees, and so then every day they go in and pick in and, okay, we'll harass them today.
No, because maybe what I plan to do is some, for example, like a garden or roses for Panchakar. So somebody likes also the garden, or they will use it for other things, or they have plans for other things.
So that's the thing is you want to do something to please Krishna, but you have to consider the whole environment that you're trying to do that in. You know what I'm saying? Let us say you have a house, you have a piece of land. Now you want to make a nice rose garden for Panchatattva. Now if all your neighbors think, well, actually you should grow jasmines, it doesn't matter. You understand? But if there's a piece of land that's been used for the deities and all that, and other people are controlling it, and you decide now you want to do service to Krishna and grow roses, you have to consider what's their involvement or what's been going on. Does that make sense? The easiest thing is to find something else. Does that make sense? Because if you check, like a rose garden, there's a huge piece of land out there on an island. Pick one that nobody cares about. You know, the one with all the weeds and everything like that? No one wants to do anything with? Because the one that is not weeds, that's the one they're all going to fight over. You pick the one that doesn't have weeds. Then you grow your roses. Then having grown roses, it's established. Then after some time, now somebody will want that one. So then you move to the next one.
That is pleasing to Krishna?
Sorry?
That is some really pleasing to Krishna if you establish something and you give it away?
It's not a matter of giving it away. It's a matter of if it works like that. Point is if others are going to deal with it and do something, they do. I'm just talking about the mentality. That's a different discussion. The mentality of meaning is find the situation in which it's not going to disturb. You know what I'm saying? Because the sense of possession, the point is the possession is there to do something for Krishna. They also want to do something for Krishna. So it's not that our doing something for Krishna is the only doing something for Krishna. Their doing is also. You know? And then one may say, but what happens if I let them use it and then they make a mess out of it? It's the material world. That's the way it works. Is that it? The point is find, you want to do your service, find a situation in which you can do your service. So that means sticking to holding on to what you have or giving it up and doing something new. It doesn't matter. The point is find what works. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, Lord Vishnu appeared on the scene. Accompanying him was King Indra. Lord Vishnu then began to speak. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, "My dear Prithu, Indra, the King of Heaven, has disturbed your execution of 100 sacrifices. Now he has come with me to be forgiven by you. Therefore, excuse him." Because he's managing the universe, so he's doing that for Krishna. But the problem is because he's working in passion, he gets very carried away by it. That's the difficulty. But he's come here to be excused. O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best among human beings. So. Advanced intelligence means there's discrimination. One can be able to tell. And eager to perform welfare activities means to benefit others. Because in other words, someone's done something wrong and they come to be forgiven. Now, that they've done something wrong and they understand it and come to be forgiven, that's not the time to then yell at them and say all the things that you always wanted to say, because they already understand. You don't get the personal satisfaction of having gone through that. But the point is it about what's right and wrong, or is it about your own personal satisfaction? Maybe we capture what's happening here. So, he could say all the things that, you know, you did this, you did that, this is not, he knows that. That's why he's come to be forgiven. So now it's a matter of working on that. Right? We don't feel satisfied. So, therefore we can say, we need that personal satisfaction. But then that's the point is that's common. That's ordinary. But to be able to do like the Prithu Maharaj does, says that is welfare activities. That's the best amongst the human beings. Otherwise, then it's just pretty ordinary. Right? Does that make sense? So previously when we were using common man, we were talking about generic, meaning okay. Here we're saying ordinary means not very okay. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. And so if someone's malicious, means it's motive ignorance. Okay. Those who are advanced, those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. So in other words, when the soul as a devotee sees, then it works out. The materialists, they don't necessarily function on the platform of the soul. If they do, they'll be jnanis. Then they're to be forgiven anyway. They'd take up and just become sadhus, that's another thing. But generally the punishment is there with the materialists because they don't identify on the platform of the soul. But the devotees are supposed to. So if one insists on dealing on the platform of the body, that's not advanced in intelligence. That's ordinary intelligence. Right? But because it may pander to our ordinary sentiments, then we think it's okay. We think it's standard. Okay. Yes.
Advanced intelligence means spiritual intelligence.
Yes. Being able to distinguish between the body and the soul. That's advanced. Not that you have some material skill or knowledge. That's just according to your nature. So having that, now you'll engage that in Krishna's service. But what we're talking about, the real advantage is being able to tell the difference between matter and spirit. That's what's really going to make the difference. In other words, one can avoid being envious to others only on the basis of transcendental knowledge, Srila Prabhupada explains. In daily life, we find that when a madman commits murder, he is excused even by a high court judge. The idea is that a living entity is always pure because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he falls into the clutches of material energy, he becomes a victim of the three modes of material nature. Indeed, whatever he does under the influence of material nature, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.14. Right? So we point out that something is wrong because it shouldn't be done. But at the same time, is we're also pointing out that, how do you say it? He wants to be forgiven. But we see his interest come here to be forgiven because he has understood he's done wrong. So that strongness may be there until what's understood, but as soon as it's understood, then the mood has to change. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.14, quote, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. Right? So we think I'm making activities, or I am getting others to act in those activities, or I'm getting the results from those actions. But that's all being carried out by the modes of nature. We simply desire to take part, and if we have the karma, then it works. Actually, the living entity, or soul, does not do anything. Everything is done under the influence of the modes of material nature. When a man is diseased, the symptoms of the disease become a source of all kinds of pain. Those who are advanced in transcendental consciousness or Krishna consciousness are never envious, neither of the soul nor of the activities of the soul under the influence of the material nature. Because otherwise, why would it be envious? If you don't have any value in it, why would you care? Something's wrong, it shouldn't be done. And if they stop doing it, then it's what we want is accomplished. Right? Yes?
Sometimes I ask my devotees to, like, somebody asked me, you should forgive him. But that person is not like in the position to be forgiven.
But what do you mean by not in position?
Like Indra, he came and...
Yes, but point is, so that you just have to explain that. It says, I'll forgive him when he has the proper attitude, when he understands what he's done wrong.
Then he can be forgiven.
Yeah. Means you personally won't get disturbed because it's under the modes of nature. But as far as officially, you know, socially, you forgive when they have the right mentality.
Yeah.
You know, but otherwise, you won't become affected by it.
So it means actually that Krishna Maharaj forgave him even before his change.
Yes. Yes.
Yes,
but now it's official. Right now it becomes. Okay. One who is both devoted and highly advanced in intelligence does not take action against the soul or the body. If there is any discrepancy, he forgives it. It is said that forgiveness is the quality of those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge. There's some kind of aspect of duty that must be corrected. But if the person stops doing what's incorrect, then it's done. Does that make sense? That's all. So all it is if you're supposed to be doing a particular service and someone's getting in the way of that, if that stops, that's all you worry about. Is that okay? Yeah. Now Maharaj Pitu asks, but identification with the body arises from illusion, which is created by the Lord's Maya. The Lord answers in the next verse. The personality like you, who are so much advanced because of executing the instructions of the previous acharyas, is carried away by the influence of material energy. Then all your advancement may be considered simply a waste of time. Right? In other words, you have that advancement, but if you're not applying it, then it's a waste of time because it's not there, it's not manifest. But when it does manifest, then it's good. Okay. Verse 4. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, if persons are so bewildered, all their endeavors are useless. Realization arises from removing Maya by service to elders. The wise know that this body has arisen by action out of desire through ignorance. Right? So if the action, the body has arisen out of actions of desire, out of ignorance. Because if we're dealing not in ignorance but on the transcendental platform, then our actions would generate a spiritual body. Right? But if we generated a material body, right, then that is because of previous action. Right? And so then that's based on ignorance. So when we have realizations, we remove Maya by service to the elders. So what's the main service to the elders? Following instruction. That's the main. Like that. And then the others are support. They're also a support. The Lord continues. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nescience, desires, and activities resulting from illusion, do not become addicted to the body. And so if you understand that it's composed of nescience, desires, and activities, but all that's based on illusion, right? So you have illusion, therefore you have the body. Then we have desires and activities to do that will generate what more things connected with the body. So that's all illusion. The whole cycle is illusion. So only when the mentality is not based on illusion, then the desire and the activity is not illusion. And then the result it gains, we also don't see a connection with illusion. Right? That actually gives a spiritual result. But we understand that even if someone is working under illusion, it's just illusion that's carrying this out. It's not the individual themselves. So one does not become addicted to the body. One functions and works with the body, but one's not addicted to the body. So one doesn't take it to be more important than it is. Verse 5. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains that the material body produces two types of illusion. In the bodily conception, when we think that sense gratification will help us, we are in illusion. Because we think engaging the senses not connected to Krishna will get a benefit. That's illusion. Because you can't get, as we mentioned, all the energy is flowing towards Krishna. We're going away from Krishna. So that means any benefit will go towards Krishna. It's not going to come to us. So whatever we get, it's still connected to Krishna. It's not connected to us. We claim ownership. But we claim ownership based on the body, but the body belongs to Krishna. Right? So when we try to do anything separate from Krishna, it just doesn't work. Right? Another kind of illusion is to think that one will be happy by trying to satisfy the desires that arise from the illusory body, or by attaining elevation to the higher planetary systems, or by performing various types of Vedic rituals. Right. So does that make sense? So basically, is what we were talking about before is you have the Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. Vaikuntha Brahma, we think that by the situation I'm in, that will make me happy, and that sense gratification itself is actually a way to be happy. So that's Ananda Brahma. We think the material world can make me happy. Vaikuntha Brahma is we think this material world is a place of happiness. It's eternal. I'll be satisfied here. Right? So in other words, the place is illusion, and the action and results coming from that, meaning the happiness is there. Right? Because I do an activity, I get a result, it becomes part of the field. So when we say about the place, it already includes that. Right? So makes sense. But when I'm saying that I can be happy, that's a different concept. I do the work, I get the result, that's one thing. But that I can be happy by that, that's another thing. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the idea that the material world can actually give happiness, that's an illusion. And that any situation is going to generate things that make one happy.
Well, this say it's half and half.
Half and half.
50%, because hellish planets, all suffering. Half is supposed to be enjoyment, so here it's supposed to be dose.
Half, half. So you're wondering what the other half is.
Yeah, everything is so bad.
Uh-huh.
Everything, if we cannot be happy here, so what is the other half?
That's the half we're looking for that doesn't really exist. See, in other words, what it's saying is the hellish conditions, it's obvious you're not enjoying. The heavenly conditions, we're an illusion to think we are enjoying.
And here
we
sometimes an illusion that we...
No, here we're an illusion on both. Yes,
the happiness is when the suffering stops, that's the happiness.
Yes, yes. So we're illusion that we're not happy with the difficulties, and we're an illusion that when it stops, we will be happy.
100%.
Yeah, but it just means, what it's meaning, half-half means the situations. In other words, the hellish plan is the situations are not nice. The heavenly plan is the situations are basically only nice. And here we have both. You know, it's just like... I was seeing, somebody was showing me this, a video of just different pictures. And it was kind of like an art kind of thing. Of different pictures of different things that had different themes. And so they had a group of photos with a theme. And one of the groups of photos we're showing these places where you have all these high-end apartment buildings, but are all around the base, the whole area is all slums. They were showing from different parts of the world. Bombay, there's areas like that. Rio, there's places like that. There's different places all over the world like that. So that's the heaven and hell right there. Yeah, so you can see. Yeah, so, you know, are you going to the shop and there's something you've been looking for a long, long time, you know, and you finally found it? That's heaven. Hell is that they only have one and you wanted two. That's another thing. That's the next step. Like that. If you were happy with what you bought, then businessmen would not have much to sell. They would just be selling potatoes and rice and dal. Right? The whole, how you say, accessories and business and all that is because of that. Hospitality, entertainment, it's all based on, at some point you get dissatisfied. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, today you're eating potatoes. Tomorrow you're eating potatoes. Come back after 10 years, you're still eating potatoes. Come back after 50 years, you're still eating potatoes. Right? But everything else, you know, that one, you know, you get it, and then after a while, no one wants it anymore. You know, it's just like was before when iPhone 3 came out, you know, that was the thing. Everybody had that thing, but now who has iPhone 3?
It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't even work anymore. Yeah, you might have iPhone 4, but not 3. It doesn't work anymore either. Yeah. You know, so then...
Okay.
One who is both devoted and highly advanced does not take action against the soul of the body. If there is any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is a quality of those who are advancing in spiritual knowledge. So that's the primary quality. So much of the time, like you hear devotees talk about, okay, Brahma, truthfulness, that will be taken as the primary quality. But did you ever hear forgiveness? It's never discussed, but it's actually the primary quality. Because truth means it's about Krishna. And when people say truth, nowadays it means facts. And even that, facts according to my perception. They don't even have to actually, if it's perceived, right? In other words, the fact of my perception, that is what I call truth. But here it's talking about, no, forgiveness is an actual symptom. Because it has to be what's the symptom. It's a quality, so that must be a symptom. So truthfulness means the symptom is it's always about Krishna. Then you could say there's truthfulness there, or forgiveness. But if it's just facts according to my perception, that's not a quality. Right? That's just my effort to get done what I need to get done. That's just me. Okay.
It's like a consequence of knowledge, forgiveness.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Just like someone who's in knowledge, another symptom will be humility.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because unless you're humble, how do you forgive? Yeah. Like that. Yeah. So these there. So we talk about humility. So that's an accepted quality. But forgiveness isn't something talked about.
One of the clinical virtues.
Forgiveness. Yeah. But it's generally the only one that everyone remembers is cleanliness and truthfulness. Yeah. And cleanliness, we have to be practical, and truthfulness means facts according to my perception. So, and the other qualities kind of go by the way. Okay, so we'll stop here for this class. Continue at 10.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Jai Nitai Gaur.
Hare Krishna.